Good morning this Thursday morning. Welcome to Radio Economica. And we have with us Mr. Jorge Valero, who is a usual speaker on Radio Economica. Good morning. I don't hear you somehow.
Can you hear me?
Yes, that's okay. Mr. Valero, you have come to talk to us again about the EU budget, but so much has been happening this year, you can't believe it, to discuss a very specific topic, which is very much that was on the agenda of the Council in December, that is the issue of conditionality. I must say, conditionality, in my understanding, is nothing new in EU policies. It has been with us, especially in external action. And mainly also in accession negotiations, I'm thinking of the Copenhagen criteria, and then in the neighborhood policies in 2003. But today you propose to discuss another dimension of conditionality, the rule of law mechanism that applies to member states, that is internally, when they use EU funds. What's really special about this rule that has been so hotly debated?
So, in fact, what I propose to discuss, and we want to discuss, it's the conditionality. First of all, the big novelty, as you said, is the rule of law conditionality. And we have to remember that this mechanism was initially proposed by the European Commission in 2018, if I'm not wrong, in May 2018. And of course, not only the multi-annual financial framework for the next period, but also the recovery fund gave a new dimension to this mechanism, because the volume that will be subject to this new conditionality will be unprecedented. We are talking about 1.8 trillion euros for the next 7 years. And so this is, I mean, in a nutshell, this conditionality basically implies that EU funds could be suspended in case of where the EU budget is at risk of being mismanaged, not only mismanaged, but let's say committing financial crimes, corruption, conflict of interest, or illegal or wrongdoing related to audits, public procurement, tax fraud, so on and so forth. But before we talk about the rule of law more in detail, we have to remember that there is another very important conditionality, which has been also very, let's say, quite controversial in the discussion and in the drafting and elaboration of the recovery fund, which is we call it the macroeconomic conditionality. And what we see, of course, there is two groups or two constituencies, let's say, affected by these conditionalities. One, of course, is Hungary and Poland in the case of the rule of law, because they are under the so-called Article 7 of the EU treaties for breaching the rule of law. And the other group, it's countries like Spain, Italy, which were not only some of the more hard hit countries by the pandemic, but they always have problems when it comes to having sound public finances. We have to remember, especially when it comes to the macroeconomic conditionality, the economic one, that this word conditionality, it's a toxic word, especially from when it comes to, because we have the memories of the bailout period with Greece, with Portugal, also Spain, for the banking sector, the bailout for the banking sector, Ireland, Cyprus, because at that period, there was cash for reforms programs. Basically, countries received money in return for reforms. But of course, there were important differences, because these countries received loans and not grants, as it is the case, for example, with the MFF or an important part of the recovery fund. And that's how we were talking about either the IMF giving large loans or not even an EU institution, or the ESM, the European Stability Mechanism, which is not an EU institution. We have to remember that it's an interinstitutional. It was created by an interinstitutional agreement between the Eurozone member states. So now talking more, I mean, we as I said, we have two different conditionalities: the economic one and the rule of law. If it's fine with you, I'm gonna finish, let's say, with the economic one. And here we can distinguish two big, let's say, sets of conditionalities, or two groups. One is we can call it more like the public finances one, the fiscal sustainability one, and the other one is more like the reforms ones, which is relevant in the context of the recovery fund. And when it comes to the fiscal one, we have to remember, and as you said in your introductory comments, that this is not something new. There is already an article in when it comes to in regards to the cohesion policy, where countries and where cohesion funds, structural funds, can be suspended for countries that commit a serious violation of the Stability and Growth Pact recommendations, and if they don't fulfill. If they don't fulfill the efforts requested by the EU in order to balance their public accounts. And actually, I don't know if you remember, but this was about to happen in 2016 when Portugal and Spain became the first countries that were formally accused of breaching the Stability and Growth Pact. And actually, I remember that Minister of Economy, Spanish Minister of Economy, Guindos, appeared before the European Parliament to, let's say, argue against the suspension of the EU fund because it would have been counterproductive. And this is actually something that never happened. The parliament also refused to suspend the EU funds, and there was no fine for Portugal and Spain. But now, in the context of the recovery fund, there are two points that make a reference to, at least in the council position, that makes a reference to this fiscal, let's say, conditionality. One is the Article 9, which is very much linked and mirrors this cohesion funds, recommendation of article. And the other one, it's a reference also included to fiscal sustainability, sustainability of public finances, included in the recovery and resilience facility, which we have to remember that this is the main pillar of the recovery fund of the Next Generation EU, because it's going to mobilize, I think it's 672 billions of the total of 750 billions. And yes, sorry, the Article 9 that I made reference is also part of this recovery and resilience facility. So what now? This is the fiscal one, but there is also the reform part that I was referring to. And here, what the Commission and Member States have been constantly demanding is that in order to receive the recovery funds, countries have to submit reforms aligned with the country-specific recommendations of 2019 and 2020. Why 2019 as well? Because the 2020 were very much focused on the pandemic, so they were more narrow and they were more light, let's say. But of course, what I was saying so far was the member states' position. And now the European Parliament adopted its position, and it basically disagrees with the Council position and the Commission position, in fact, on two important points, and especially it's on these two conditionalities. First of all, they don't want anything related to fiscal conditionality. And secondly, they want to narrow down the conditionality for the reforms. They want only those country-specific recommendations that are relevant to overcome the pandemic. So meaning digital agenda, green transition, social cohesion, territorial cohesion, modernization of the public administration. But so let's say that they want to, of course, to make sure that the money is properly used, but they don't want to overburden countries in a very difficult situation. And in fact, we don't know what is going to happen with this macroeconomic conditionality, because the recovery and resilience facility is almost the very last issue that has to be agreed between the parliament and the member states in the context of the recovery fund. There was a trilogue this week, if I'm not wrong, a couple of days ago. There is no agreement yet. I mean, we have to see what will be the terms when the discussion ends. But so far, I mean, the member states and parliament have different positions. You're mute.
You're telling us that this microeconomic conditionality really is embedded in the recovery plan, in particular the biggest fund in that, the RRF, but we're not quite certain because, as far as I understand, the Growth and Stability Pact is suspended. Is that right?
Exactly. So that's precisely the parliament's argument, not to include Article 9, to erase any reference to fiscal sustainability. They say that it doesn't make any sense to discuss at this point any reference to the fiscal trajectory of countries when actually we don't know when and how we are gonna reintroduce the Stability and Growth Pact. Even more, the Commission is in the process of reviewing the Stability and Growth Pact, so we don't know what Stability and Growth Pact is gonna be reintroduced. So to sum up, the uncertainty is very big. So there are other priorities right now. Of course, money has to be well used. Money has to be used for the priorities that will be not only to get out of the hole, but also to transform our economies. But it's a bit useless to have such a heat political discussion on fiscal, let's say, adjustments, such a toxic word, when it's needed, is not needed, helpful in the current context. And then, of course, we have the very big block, which is the issue of why we are here today, especially following the last summit, of the rule of law. Conditionality. And here, as I said at the beginning, the proposal was made by the European Commission in May 2018. Of course, the pandemic, as I said, gave a huge new dimension to this mechanism, because we're talking about 750 billion more to control and to supervise, and all these while, let's say, the tensions with Hungary and Poland have continued to, and the disagreements on various issues, political disagreements, not necessarily only on rule of law, continue to increase either on migration or also some controversial ones, for example, the gay community, LGBT community. We have to remember that during the last July summit, initially it was expected to be one of the most controversial issues that leaders would discuss. But at the end, most of the time was dedicated to the volume of grants and the relation with grants and loans. And the rule of law issue came at the very end. It was solved in a parallel discussion with some leaders, and it was. Orban was brought in because somehow it was watered down what the Commission initially proposed in May. For example, the proposal was not gonna have any more this preemptive character. The scope was going to be also a bit more limited. So all this had to, let's say, to gain Orban's initial support. And then what happened is that, of course, some countries like the Nordic ones, the Netherlands, who were more in favor of the mechanism, were not happy with that agreement, and they fought for strengthening this mechanism. And this was also the parliament's position. And once the council adopted its position in the trilogues between the member states and the parliament, the final text that was agreed actually was, let's say, a stronger version of what was initially agreed by the leaders in July. For example, now included this more like preemptive spirit. So, for example, the mechanism could act also when there was a risk of a breach of rule of law, not necessarily only once the, let's say, the action was committed and proved. And also, it broadened the scope to include also the importance of the independence of the judiciary system, which is, at the end of the day, the most important issue at stake for opposition parties inside these countries, but also for EU institutions, and especially for these countries that were more like, let's say, the champions of this conditionality of this mechanism. For example, I'm going to refer to 2 points of the text. The text lists the eight potential breaches of the rule of law. For example, in regards to public procurement, tax fraud, corruption, and the fourth, which is important, one said that or highlights the importance of the effective judicial review by independent courts of actions or actions by the authorities refers to points A, B, and C. And these points are what I said, all these tax fraud, corruption, and things like that. So they say that it has to be, and this has been the argument of the critics, or sorry, of those championing this initiative, that there has to be a proper judiciary review of in case there was a violation committed or a breach committed against the EU budget, because if there is not an independent judiciary system, there won't be guarantees to ensure that the EU budget is not only properly managed but also properly protected.
If I may interrupt you, so we have been talking about values, rule of law, which includes fundamental right of liberties as well. But you're talking about judicial review and judicial system. So this is really new in the sense that this regards the national system as far as justice is concerned. And typically, justice used to be considered as subsidiary, but there must be a link, I suppose, between this judicial review and the potential harm or observed harm for the budget. Am I right?
Certainly, you made the link. Here, we are not talking, of course, the Commission had an issue with Hungary and Poland. So they needed to find the right angle not to, let's say, violate the subsidiarity process and not to create a mechanism that lack the proper legal basis, EU basis. So the argument was the protection of the EU budget. So it was not speaking about values in the vacuum, even though they are, of course, very important, but you need to enforce the protection of what you want to protect. So the argument was the protection of the EU budget, and that's why we were talking about cases like audit, tax fraud, corruption related to the EU funds. But also, in order to ensure that you have the proper guarantees, you are talking about public prosecutors, you are talking about independent justice system, because if that mechanism, national mechanism that is going to oversee this protection of the EU budget is either corrupt or is either non-dependent or politically biased, the EU budget is not going to have the proper guarantees to be protected. So that was, let's say, the angle, the legal basis that the Commission found in May 2018 to, let's say, pressure these countries. And precisely one of the issues raised by Hungary and Poland, because the argument is that this whole mechanism was designed against them, was that that the mechanism, the concessions they expected from the rest of the EU leaders and member states was that the mechanism would be fair, it won't be used in an arbitrary manner, and it won't apply, for example, in cases of pressure them when, for example, they disagree on migration, asylum, or LGBT rights, or family law, things like that, because they felt that this mechanism would be used, let's say, to put them against the wall when they disagree on these issues, where actually Poland and Hungary are mostly the minority ones versus the majority or most of the rest of the 25 countries.
So this will not be the case.
No, it won't. That's what this is. First of all, this was not part of the text, never. And secondly, this is what was included in, and this is what I was going to talk about now, in this interpretative declaration document that was drafted by Germany and Poland and Hungary. They negotiated over the past week to lift the veto that Hungary and Poland hold for 3 weeks, basically blocking the approval process of the MFF and the recovery fund. They said that as long as this mechanism was in place, they won't give the blessing. What happened is that the mechanism was approved by a qualified majority in the council, so Hungary and Poland couldn't veto the mechanism, but the unanimity is needed for the MFF and for the own resources decision, which is the one needed to increase the budgetary ceiling, the EU budgetary ceiling, in order for the Commission to go to the markets and borrow the 750 billion. So there was like a crossing of, let's say, vetoes, and that's how Hungary and Poland basically had this very important and powerful leverage to at the end to agree on this declaration that, as I will explain now, it was relevant, especially because of one point. Basically, the declaration included three points. The first one, that, as I said, no arbitrary will be fair and it won't be used in other issues not related to properly, let's say, proper management of the EU budget. The other point was a reference to the emergency brake already included in the mechanism, which allowed one of these leaders of Hungary and Poland to raise a concern at the European Council level. So basically just for domestic consumption, because at the end of the day, the approval process won't be by unanimity of the any sanction procedure. So they won't have any veto, but it's just, let's say, if they want to flex the muscles in front of all the leaders, I mean, for this country, always for the domestic consumption, is always very important, all this, let's say, political posturing. Mm-hmm. And finally, and this was relevant, it was the most controversial point, was the delay in the, let's say, activation of the mechanism, because legally speaking, the mechanism will enter into force 1st of January 2020. But of course,
21. Yes, of course.
The political posturing of Orban, Morawiecki, but especially Orban and all that, Hungary will hold elections in a couple of years. So Orban wanted to delay as much as possible the entry into force of this mechanism, especially having in mind these elections. Mm. So what they agreed is that since they were going to challenge the mechanism before the European Court of Justice, their strategy was that the mechanism won't be able to be used until there is a Court of Justice ruling on the mechanism. And of course, this is very, let's say, legally, and it sparked a lot of criticism in the parliament, mm-hmm. because one regulation that has been legally adopted, it cannot be suspended sine die because there is a judiciary process ongoing. So the argument was that, or the, let's say, the approach was that in order to apply the mechanism, the Commission will have to develop some guidelines, and those guidelines will take into account the Court of Justice ruling. So basically, those guidelines won't be those guidelines used for the suspension of the EU funds won't be ready until the Court of Justice ruling comes, whenever it comes. So at the end, de facto, the mechanism won't be used until the EU judges give their verdict date. But what the Commission President said, von der Leyen said, and this is something I guarantee that also was requested from the opposite side, from the Netherlands and other countries who were critical or a bit wary of the agreement between Germany and Hungary and Poland, was that the Commission will take into account every potential breach happening as from 1st of January 2020. So once the guidelines are developed, of course, the mechanism will be applied against those violations. But of course, as I said, the problem is that during these 2-3 years until the Court of Berlin, Court of Justice ruling comes, there won't be any suspension of the EU fund. So Orban very much is true that has won this brilliant space that he was seeking.
Now you've explained, if I was a European judge, I could be very unhappy that I'm being used for retardation in a way of a process. But as you said, the 1st of January 2021, when it all starts for the European budget, the decisions and the principles and the system should be in place and applied with some delays, of course. Now, what other obstacles do you expect to come until January? I mean, what are the next steps? Of course, Parliament and Council. Parliament meets next week, or has it?
The very big outstanding issue in the context of this conditionality is for the next few days is actually an agreement on the recovery and resilience facility between the Parliament and the Member States. Then we will see in detail what is the solution, the consensus, the compromise when it comes to this Article 9. And when it comes to any reference to fiscal sustainability or sound public finances, whatever word they use, if there's any at the end, and also what country-specific recommendations, basically what reforms member states have to submit to Brussels in order to access their part of the recovery funds. This is something that we will see in the next few days. In terms of the recovery, in terms of the rule of law, I mean, the everything is very much said and done. Now, we will see how, well, Sorry, I mean, there was something that happened also in the last hours. The European Parliament approved not only the MFF, but also the rule of law mechanism. So the Parliament gave its blessing also to the mechanism, but also there was a criticism towards the Member States and the European Council for agreeing on this declaration, because, I mean, they were not very happy with it, but at the end of the day, the mechanism was approved. And at the end, of course, I mean, there is a bit of a bittersweet flavor in the parliament, because they see that Orban somehow also the end result is that the Orban could claim victory, but at the end of the day, the MEPs also admit that. Now we have a mechanism, a rule of law mechanism in place, and then for the first time, it's going to be effective. There's going to be control on those members who are misusing the EU budget, and the judiciary system is not properly overseeing it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Valero. I think we have come to the end of this interview. Unfortunately, it's gone very quickly, and it was very interesting topic. Thank you very much.